Four, please.
Oh, what a shot.
Oh,
yes.
Right. Have you seen anything like that?
Four, please. Now drive it.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Four Please Now Driving, the official Masters podcast. I'm your host, Marty Smith, and Thursday at the Masters did not disappoint. We all didn't know what the weather would look like. We knew it would be windy and maybe a little bit dicey in the morning, which it was, delayed play by 2 hours, but ultimately it turned into a beautiful day here at Augusta National, and Bryson DeChambeau leads round one with a career best 7-under-65. I'm so thrilled to break down the first round with my friend Shane Bacon, who hosts X Spaces. I'm still learning to call it X Spaces.
I mess it up about half the time.
I understand. And is broadcasting the Masters featured groups as well. So, brother, you saw it firsthand. Let's just start with the weather. We expected terrible and wound up with Chamber of Commerce.
I got up early, as most people do on Thursday. I woke up earlier than I wanted to wake up, and I was driving to Starbucks, and I was thinking to myself, this is better than I thought it'd be. It wasn't that rainy. It wasn't that windy. Obviously, the delay was kind of necessary just because of the wind, but once we got rocking and rolling, we were dialed. And we were covering Tiger, and we were covering Max, and that was so fun. But you know, when you're not covering a group, you're not covering a player, and they're starting to creep up the leaderboard, you kind of pull up their scorecard. I'm like, Bryson's playing pretty good. And then he gets to the back, and then he just goes bananas. And I think we've been creeping this way with Bryson. He played solid in the majors last year. He's one of those dudes that, you know, he seems to have wanted to understand Augusta really since he was an amateur. I mean, I remember back when he qualified for this thanks to the U.S. amateur win, and he was playing with Jordan Spieth, the Masters champion, and he was playing neck and neck with him for 17 holes on that Thursday. Made kind of a mess, if you remember, of that 18th hole and like went into the weekend and played fine, was low amateur. But it feels like we've kind of been coming to this point with Bryson.
It's been a journey, to say the least, one that I have thoroughly enjoyed, but also it's taken a big toll on me in numerous situations. I will say that I've learned a lot from it, and I'm in a place now where I've figured some stuff out with my golf game, golf swing. I'm just in a comfortable place where I'm doing the same thing every single week, so I feel like it's just ingraining consistently over the course of time. I'm not trying new things. I'm not doing new things. I'm just doing more of the same, and I feel like that's really what's been different from the, you know, a couple years ago.
I feel like Bryson wants nothing more than to win the Masters and contend at the Masters. So seeing him play well and then seeing Scotty play well is, I mean, you talk about dial up a good day.
I find it interesting that you use the terminology, he wants to learn how to play the Masters. I was walking the second hole for ESPN with Tony Finau a couple days back, and he explained to me that when he first came to Augusta in 2018, he wasn't focused on how to play Augusta because he thought, well, all right, I have that shot already in my bag. I don't know that I need to specifically focus on it for the intricacies of playing here. But as he's progressed, he's played, like started to prepare to play Augusta. Describe what that means exactly.
I'll give you a great example of it. Victor Hovland today on 14. Hole location's right over that back hump. On 14, 14 is my favorite green at Augusta National. I'm obsessed with it. I mean, I come out, it's one of my first places I go when I get here. And it was over the hump, and he had a great tee shot and had a wedge in. And he hits a wedge, and he got cute with it, and it lands on top of the hill. It's probably 8 feet, but it was too short. It rolls back down. So a Tiger Woods, a veteran of this place, somebody that obviously understands the golf course, hits that pitch shot 6-7 feet by and tries to make par, and if they make five, whatever. Victor, who has played very solid at Augusta National over the years, is trying to make the pitch shot, hits it to about 2 feet, but you can't hit it to 2 feet short of the hole, comes back down to his feet. Now, he almost makes the next one for par and makes a bogey, but those are those little moments. And we had Nick Dunlap this morning watching him play a little bit as a first-timer here at Augusta, and you just see little moments, gassing a 10-footer past the hole when it's down grain and a little downhill, and you have 4 feet coming back. Now, you might make that 95% of the time, but you're inevitably going to miss those. And so there's those little moments. And then to go to Tiger for a moment, think about 10, 11, 12. Bunker shot at 10, really, really hard shot. He hits it 5 feet below the hole, has up the hill, makes it, no big deal. 11, he hits it, the second shot has long way in, hits it on the right side, comes down to that slope, he hits that really sexy pitch shot, and almost makes it, right?
Masterclass.
And then 12, is the hardest of the bunch. He's in the pine straw. He takes out whatever, a 6-iron, and bumps it into the hill and gets it to 8 feet and makes that for par. A player that doesn't understand this golf course probably plays those 3 holes 2 over, and Tiger plays them even. So there's a big difference in just understanding not just where to miss it, but where's the best place to make a putt from. And I feel like Tiger did that exceptionally well today. And obviously, Scotty has been just the king of that over the last few years.
You had a firsthand look, a close-up look at how he was performing physically. How did he look to you? What, I think he's through 13.
He got through 13. He looked way better than some of the rumors I had heard earlier in the week, said he was struggling, said he didn't look as good. It was really interesting. I know you're a big sports dude. LeBron talked about, as he got older, conserving energy on the court. And by conserving energy, he said, I don't run as much when I don't have to. And if you look at some of those analytics on LeBron, he's not putting as much effort into the plays he doesn't need to be involved in. He's not running back maybe as much unless he can chase down and block the ball, right? He's just kind of taking time. I feel like Tiger, from the first tee, it felt very much like 2019 when Tony Finau goes up to him and says, how's the family? And he said, fine, and just kept walking. You saw it on his face from the first tee on. It felt like there was a level of energy conservation in Tiger where he was just doing enough every hole. Make a par, make a birdie, let's move on. If I make a bogey, that's fine. But I was very impressed with the way he just went about his business. He didn't crack a smile until 10. That's the first time I saw Tiger smile on the golf course. So it just felt like he was moving fine. I mean, he's never going to move great, you know that. But he moved fine enough, and the golf swing was unbelievable. We didn't see the big misses, the big wipes right, and the big pull hooks left. Everything was pretty straight and pretty solid.
There was a... I don't remember what hole he was on. I think it was after his drive on 13, right before the end of his day.
When he hit it way right.
Right. And there was a close-up of his facial expression when he handed the driver to the caddy. And it was almost like he wasn't seeing red, as it were, but there was a distance in his gaze, if that makes sense. And you just don't see that look from very many people, regardless of what the outcome of the performance was. I think that if his body will comply, I mean, he said to me a couple days ago, if everything goes right, I believe I can win this again. I can't fathom if that were to happen. This place would explode.
Well, I mean, you think about one, and we were on the call. He makes the birdie on one, which he never birdied. I think it's the first time he's birdied the first hole in the first round since 1999, which is pretty wild to think about. Makes birdie on one, which is a hole that has given him a lot of fits over the years, and it's a big deal. Goes to two. Two was playing a lot tougher into the win. You know, two was a par five that a lot of players in the afternoon weren't getting to. But that birdie on one really, really set the tone for me. And it was just such an unbelievable moment to see him go out there, make three out of the gate, and just kind of keep that intensity going. The big if is tomorrow, obviously. He's got to finish that the first round and play the second round. So gets through tomorrow. He said, some days I wake up and I feel good. Some days I wake up and I don't. He needs to wake up tomorrow and feel good, because tomorrow's going to be the Everest day for Tiger. If he can get through tomorrow and be within 5, 6, 7 of the lead and play a solid round of golf, who knows? But tomorrow is going to be the big, big day for Tiger.
Yeah, he told me a couple of days ago, the leg is not what it once was, but that's my life now. It is what it is.
It's why I think the upper body is so big these days, is because he's got to swing the club so much with the upper body, because the legs and the ankle and the back, he's even mentioned a couple of times, aren't going to be what they once were, obviously. And so he's got to build up that upper body. I mean, it's not going for beach muscles, right? This is a guy that understands, I got to swing an X amount of mile per hour to be able to contend with these young guys. And there was a couple times today where he hit it past Max.
Scotty is so many people's favorite coming in. He's the overwhelming favorite in terms of the folks who wager their wealth. And he gets out of here with a 66. After the first round, extremely, extremely good performance from him.
13th round under par in 17 rounds at the Masters. I mean, there are people that understand the place. Jack understood it. Arnie understood it. Tiger understood it, understands it. Phil understands it. Phil played solid golf today as well. Scotty's that next dude. I feel like we kind of thought it was going to be Jordan, and obviously Jordan has shown plenty of great glimpses after the victory. He's been close a couple of times. Didn't play great today. But Scotty seems like the next guy to me, and it's so easy. Scotty makes it look, and I'm not comparing anybody to Tiger Woods ever, But Scotty's so good at hitting his conservative lines, not just with the tee shots, but the irons. It's 20 feet left on the right side of the hole. It's below the hole in the par fives. Two putt, make your birdie, get out of the way. Think outside of the bunker hole out on 12. What was exceptional from his round? It's just so solid, and he makes good golf look very, very easy. He's done that this year, and since the putter woke up, really, at Bay Hill and beyond, he's a different dude.
I mean, when I was walking out to the first tee, I was fairly surprised with how many people were under par already. Going into today with the forecast the way it was supposed to be, and I've played this tournament once before in some pretty high winds, and it's an extremely challenging golf course. And yeah, I felt like, you know, today I just did a really good job of, you know, Teddy, I would say, did a really good job of kind of, you know, guessing the wind correctly, if that makes sense. And, you know, we stole a few shots on the par threes, I felt like. And then, you know, I played the par fives well.
Yeah, he goes to the mallet putter, and all of a sudden he really almost felt like he went, even though he's been world number one and won this tournament before, and he's a wonder kind and all that, it feels like he's just gone to a different plane. And part of going to that different plane for him is seeming completely unaffected by anything else. Like, he lives his life in this beautifully present way with unbelievable perspective that belies his youth. And I marvel at the kid. I just think that he has such a tremendous way of approaching all of this.
I go back to when he became world number one for the first time and his dad gave him that hug and said, "I'm proud of you as a golfer, but I'm more proud of you as a guy, as a man." I think about that all the time when I look at Scottie Scheffler, because we almost want him to be more tenacious, right? We want him to be more fist pumpy. I even wrote it. I think I wrote something about it during his Bay Hill performance, because he wasn't making putts early in the week. He had this exhausted look when putts would even go in. Like, all right, finally that one went in. And he's changed that a little bit. And, you know, body language can be a big thing, even for yourself, even for your own self-confidence. And he's one of those guys that seems like he's building a bit on just projecting himself as the best in the world. But, man, it looks so easy right now for that guy.
He said to me about his perspective 2 years ago on Saturday evening before he won the Masters. I asked him to what degree he'd allow himself to consider that achievement. And his answer stopped time. He said, "If I win this golf tournament, it will change my life on the course, but it won't affect my life on the course at all." And so I go into tomorrow with zero pressure or stress because I know it's not up to me, so I can go play freely. And I just thought that was such a beautiful way to summarize his overall philosophy. Another guy that I think has this place really figured out is Will Zalatoris. 7 of his 9 career rounds, he's gone under par, did it again today. I think he shot 70. What do you see from him in the way that he attacks this place?
Just a ball-striking maestro. I mean, there are guys that make it sound different even when they're on a professional golf driving range. Wyndham Clark, I feel like it sounds different right now. Zalatoris is a similar guy. He wants this. He wants to be in contention. You get the taste of it. Some guys kind of shy away from it. Some guys want to get back in the arena. He's one of those dudes that loves the arena. He loves major championship-style golf. He likes when it's tough. He's one of those guys that I think as it gets tougher this weekend, he's going to be excited about that. He's not going to be scared of the golf course or playing tough or a ball rolling in the water. I feel like he's one of those dudes that as it gets tougher, he gets more excited about the golf course because he knows he can thrive. He might not be the best putter in the world, but it doesn't really matter around here. We've seen mediocre putters win at Augusta National. He's a guy that can, in tough conditions, hit 15, 16 greens in regulation and take advantage of it. And I feel like he's one of those guys that's kind of like waiting to win the major. You know, it's not, am I going to win a major? It's one of these is coming very, very soon. Felt very much like John Rahm at Torrey Pines, right? Where he'd been close a few times and it's like, is he going to get it done? John was like, I'll get it done eventually. It's not a big deal. I know I'm going to do it.
Speaking of Rahm, not a great day for the defending Masters champion.
So good on the front and then on the first 9 and then just flipped and it was kind of lost a little
bit.
But
he made it very clear. I mean, he said point blank, I'm far from out of this thing. Like, I still have a really good opportunity to come back tomorrow and be fine. And certainly he has the ability to do it. One more person I'd like to discuss before we move on to what you expect tomorrow, and that's Rory. You know, he's chasing the career slam and whatnot. What did you see today from him?
Played good enough. I feel a little bit like what Rahm said. It wasn't great. It wasn't exceptional, but it was fine. Rory has shot himself out of these things on Thursdays and Fridays. I know he had that late stumble where he made a bogey on 17, but he's there. He shot under par. He's hanging around. I think it was a good start, and I think Rory's key to this week has been flying under the radar. He's still flying under the radar, right? Not atop the leaderboard. You guys interview Bryce, and you guys talk to Scotty. Do your whole thing. Tomorrow, I could see him coming out and really rocking it. So the swing, the driver, the iron swing, they haven't matched up this year, and that's never really been the case with Rory over the last 2 or 3 years. It feels like we're closer and closer as we get into this. So I feel like it was a completely fine round of golf, and he's in a position where, just like John Rahm said, he can still attack.
His work with Butch Harmon is interesting yes. to me. I mean, the internet exploded when everyone found out that he was working with Butch again. But he said, we text all the time.
All the time.
And when you go see Butch, you get 2 swing tips and 30 great stories. But you always leave swinging the club better. So if that means Rory feels like he's swinging the club better and his confidence is higher, obviously, he has the talent to get around.
Oh, I mean, I'd go see Bluey if Bluey helped me swing the golf club better. You know, I mean, I don't care who it is that's helping me in my golf game. Like, I'll go see anybody. So
you're my boy, Bluey?
Yeah, I mean, you know, my son's obsessed. But, you know, you go live in that space with Butch, and Butch is so good. I think something interesting Rory said about Butch was he always has a player to compare you to. He's always got a video he can pull up of Norman here and Zinger here and Tiger here and Adam Scott there and show you via video or just – you know, his dictionary of knowledge about being a golf instructor for 50 years that he can show you and say, play off what I'm showing you here versus trying to get you to feel something on the backswing.
A really good first day. We have several groupings who have to finish early tomorrow. What do you expect from tomorrow from the golf course and from those who played very well today?
It's going to be an extremely tough Friday. I think it's going to be the toughest Friday we've had in 10 years. That's my opinion. I think the wind's going to blow and gust 20 to 30 miles an hour is what they're calling for. It's already firm, and if you looked late, that browning of the greens got my eye. It looked a little bit like this chair, which is a good thing, by the way. Brown on the golf course is okay. Some people kind of get scared of it, but that's what this golf course should look like, and that's what this tournament should be about. I think it's going to be a really tough golf course tomorrow. I think ball strikers are going to succeed. The Zalatorises, the John Rahms, and, of course, the Scottie Schefflers. Players like that are in control of their golf swing, I think will have some success. So I feel like I'm going to lean towards those players. And then to me, I think Tiger coming out tomorrow, just seeing how the body feels. Let's see how it looks when he's finishing up this round. Hopefully finish under par. He's got a par five left to play, obviously. He made birdie on one of the par fives today, and that's it. Come out tomorrow, birdie 15, get it in at 1 or 2 under par, and then we can see what we can do in the afternoon. But I think it's going to be tough. I think this is going to be spicy the next 3 days.
Can't wait, brother. Make sure you guys watch, listen to Shane on X, Twitter.
You nailed it.
Spaces.
It's the thing that we are on that we probably shouldn't be on.
It is amazing coverage with the featured groupings, brother. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Appreciate
so much,
your insight. Yep.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mr. Jack Nicklaus.
Thursday morning at the Masters means it is time for yet another cherished tradition, the honorary starter ceremony. With 11 green jackets between them, Jack Nicklaus, Gary Player, and Tom Watson opened the tournament in grand fashion.
Bottom line, we're all inside that curtain. We all knew what we're trying, you know, we all knew the stakes, and we all played the game. I jokingly say, I am so fortunate being able to play a game for a living, and, you know, how great a deal is that? To be able to play something, a game that you truly love.
Detroit Lions quarterback Jared Goff was in attendance Thursday. Goff, who played in Super Bowl 53 while with the Rams and led the Lions to the NFC Championship game last season, knows what it's like to compete when the lights are the brightest. Jared Goff is the quarterback for the resurgent Detroit Lions. Thank you so much for your time, brother. I appreciate it. All right. Jared, I'm of the mind that there are 5 American sporting institutions, all right?
Okay.
I'm a NASCAR guy. Daytona 500, Indianapolis 500, Kentucky Derby, Masters, Super Bowl.
All right. I like it.
You're in?
I'm in.
You've obviously played in one of those.
I have.
A few questions based on your perspective there. How do you describe the Masters experience overall to the Super Bowl experience that you guys had as players?
Yeah, well, I haven't been lucky enough yet to play in the Masters, so I'm still working on that side of the game. But the fan experience is unbelievable. It's unmatched, and it's hard to describe. Every detail is thought of, and it's a whole lot of fun to enjoy.
These guys, one of the things that they have to do is manage all the extra variables that the Masters is, and you've lived that too. When you played in the Super Bowl, right. you had extra media,
right.
probably had a lot of extra family,
right.
managing tickets, all right, all those things. Maybe some sponsor
sure.
for these guys, some yep. sponsor events. What's the process of making sure you stay compartmentalized on the job
yeah.
with all of that?
Yeah, just having everything in order and having your priorities where they're supposed to be, and I'm sure these guys do. And but it is hard. You have a lot of people pulling on you in different directions and asking you to do certain things. And, I'm sure whoever ends up winning this week can say that they handled everything the right way through the week, and it probably helped them win.
One of the things that is really parallel between these players and the Masters and the quarterback position specifically is you have to be able to flush it. No matter happened, sure. you got to flush it. So do they. What's that challenge in your role? Yeah, I'm sure it's hard.
Yeah, it's hard, and it's hard on the biggest stage, but we've trained for it. That's what we prepare for. It's what we work for, and it's not always going to go to your way. Bad things are going to happen. You may hit a bad shot. You may throw a bad throw, and got to figure out how to do your best on the next rep.
Everybody has a favorite Masters memory. I wonder which you cherish the most.
You know, I was here 5 years ago, 2019, with my dad, and we were sitting on I believe it was eight green, and Tiger came through. It was the year he won, but it was Saturday. And I think he made a birdie or a par right in front of us on eight and sitting there with my dad. And, I'll never forget it.
Greatest to ever do it. And it's an all being around him, I've interviewed him a bunch of times, but there's definitely a certain aura that accompanies guys like him, MJ,
sure. Sure.
those kind of guys. Who, have you played with anybody that was that way?
In football?
Yeah.
Aaron Donald.
Oh, yeah, there you
yeah.
go.
Oh, yeah.
That guy definitely has that juice.
He's one of the best, too, and obviously happy he's retired now, but he's a hell of a player, and it was a lot of fun to be alongside him for a few years.
Who is the best golfer in the NFL that you've played with?
Oh, that's a good question. Man.
I know Romo's good.
Oh, yeah, so I've played in that American Century thing. Romo's probably the best one. He's now retired, obviously. I know Robbie Gould was really good for a while. A lot of those kickers are good. You know, there's some guys on our team that can get around a little bit. Jack Fox, a decent player. I don't know if I have a great answer for you there.
I'm a huge fan of your coach, but his intent, Dan Campbell, I'm sure that his intensity might not necessarily be befitting the golf course at times. Have you ever played with him?
No, I'm not sure he's much of a golfer.
He doesn't strike me as
well. No, I don't think he would be. I bet he plays once a year when it's with the boys to play some golf, but no, I don't know if his personality is quite fit for it or if he enjoys it that much. It may be a little bit too slow for him.
When you played for the Rams and lived in California, you had the golf course in the backyard.
Yeah.
What have we done in Detroit?
Nothing.
Okay.
Nothing
explain,
in Detroit.
Explain to our viewers about the golf course.
Yeah, I had a little, a par three set up in my backyard. I had a little bit of space to do something and a little 45-yard shot downhill, and it was fun. I had that for a little while. I've since moved from there, but it was a fun thing to go in the backyard for 15 minutes and mess around with.
How did your friendship with Max Homa develop?
Oh, man. Max went to Cal, so we had that connection there. I hung with him at the waste management stuff and just seen him around. And he also went to the same high school as my fiance, so they had a connection there as well. So we've kind of crossed paths a million times and have always been a fan of his and a fan of the way he does things. And have been able to hang with him a few times. It's been fun.
He's one of the funniest dudes out here.
He's the best.
I mean, he has such a tremendous personality, and it's been great for the game.
I'm pulling for him.
All right, so you're pulling for him. My next question was not who do you think is going to win, who do you want to win?
I would like to see Joaquin Niemann.
Why?
Because I think he's playing so well, and I know he wants it so bad. I'm just a fan of his, too. I think Max is up there for me as, like, just a fan of Fowler, Spieth, Justin, that whole crew. Like, just friends and fans with those guys. I like Niemann. I don't know. Xander would be fun, too.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, brother.
Hey,
thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. Yep, that was great.
The perspective of an elite athlete is always so fascinating to me, how the challenges of their respective sports relate to one another. NASCAR star Tyler Reddick attended his first Masters Thursday, and we met at the Big Oak Tree. Because when you don't have your cell phone, you resort to the famous Augusta National landmarks. And my friends, as Scotty alluded to earlier, it was windy, really windy. Tyler Reddick is the driver of the number 45 Toyota in the NASCAR Cup Series, and someone I've known a long, long time. Good to see you, brother.
Thank you.
We got the shoe memo. Both of us have on
pretty close,
triple white Jordan Low ones. All right, first Masters experience.
Yes.
How do you describe it?
Man, it's incredible. I've heard so much about it over the years. Obviously, on Sundays we're racing, it's hard to catch all of it. But I love tuning in and watching this on TV. But to be here in person and experience it, it's incredible, honestly.
What stands out the most? Where have you seen the whole course? What's been the experience today?
I mean, everything's just, I mean, you hear them talk about it so much, how just this entire facility is just so clean and perfect and everything just looks so incredible. So I really enjoyed that. But, you know, one thing that those that come know is no phones. And I've honestly enjoyed that a lot, too, because I've been really plugged into what's happening here around the course and what's happening in front of me.
But yet you had the opportunity to chat with your wife today from here at Augusta National. How'd that go?
Yeah, I found the landlines over here somewhere. I think it was over here to the left of me. And, you know, it's my first time, right? So I wasn't too familiar. And I found them, and I dialed her up. I know she keeps her phone on Do Not Disturb, so I called it a couple times. She eventually picked up and was like, "Who is this?" I'm like, "It's me. I'm calling you. How's it going? How's Bo and everybody at home?" So, yeah, she's gotten to experience this before, so she didn't really let me in on all the secrets, but she really enjoyed it too. So for me, it's great to finally take this in.
I'm impressed you knew her number off the top of your head. I know my wife's number, but there's not many I know right off the top of my head. When you guys go to Daytona for the 500, it's a very different experience as drivers. You have more media, you have more family coming, you probably have more sponsor engagements than you might at another facility, and that's how it is for these guys who are playing in the Masters as well. What's the challenge of making sure that you're compartmentalized on the job?
Man, it's a difficult thing to manage for sure. You know, you want to do everything you can to keep your partners happy. If it wasn't for them, you wouldn't be able to do what you do on the racetrack, right? If it wasn't for people like them believing in you, you wouldn't get the ride. You wouldn't have the partnership on the vehicle that makes the whole thing go around. So it's all very, very important balance. And race days get very busy very quick. But the dirt racer in me that grew up just rapid fire all night long was kind of used to that. So I feel like I've kind of adjusted to it pretty well.
I don't know how the folks at Talladega Boulevard would do here. How do you describe, I love the laugh. How do you describe the difference between what you and I experience on Talladega Boulevard and these fine patrons making their way around Augusta National?
I feel like the sun would do them in and all the extra walking I have to do. The boulevard is pretty big, right? And there's a lot going on in the infield at Talladega. But all the elevation change and all the walking you have to do, the folks at the boulevard will have to mix in a few waters along the way.
I completely agree with that. Okay, so for those of you watching who don't know, Tyler's two bosses are Denny Hamlin, who's won more than 50 races at the Cup Series level, three-time Daytona 500 champion. He'll be a first ballot Hall of Famer. Tyler's other boss is?
Michael Jordan.
MJ, okay.
I don't know what gave it away. Was it the hat, the shirt, the shoes?
The black cat shorts?
Yeah, the Grove shorts. So, yeah. No, I came all decked out and everything today, so. There's a lot of pressure when you have two bosses like that, for sure.
So which one, both of those gentlemen are infatuated with the game of golf. Which one of them is better at golf?
Ooh. I'm going to have to go with Michael. You know, I think Denny's pretty good from what I understand. I've gotten to play with him a few times, but Denny's got a lot of roles to fulfill. Driver, owner, checking up with everybody at 2311, all of his duties to Joe Gibbs Racing, so I think Michael's getting in some more tee time, so I'd have to give the nod to Michael right now.
I'm on board with that. MJ's playing a lot of golf. A lot of people watching won't understand what it's like to work for him. His competitive drive is legendary. Many people, including former North Carolina head basketball coach Roy Williams, told me the only person he's ever known who had the competitive drive that Michael does is Tiger Woods. How do you describe, even now as your owner, Michael's competitive drive?
It's truly something. And, you know, I'm kind of new, right? This is year two for me at 2311 Racing. But the time I've gotten to spend around him, just, you know, his understanding of our cars and what we're doing and knowing what to say to me or Bubba to kind of get us riled up. You know, whenever him and Bubba go back and forth, it's always been very entertaining. And, yeah, right from the get-go, Michael's let me know what he thinks of the areas I need to improve on, and for me, that's really helped motivate me to get better. So, yeah, he's very good at knowing what to say and how to, you know, rally the team when he's there at the racetrack. He's a great leader, honestly, and we're really lucky to have him as an owner.
I'm not sure if you have any friends who are playing in the Masters. Do you?
No, but I mean, you know, just from the different media I take in here and there, you know, I've gotten to listen to a few interviews of Max Homa. So I feel like that guy, you know, fellow father, right, trying to figure out professional sports and being a dad. That's kind of the one I've kind of gravitated towards most recently.
There's a substantial amount of precision in your job. At certain racetracks, the way you have to manipulate the race car and the lines you have to know, all of those things mere mortals like us can't do. Same thing for these guys out here. In what ways maybe do you relate of the focus that they have to have? Now, I know you're going really fast, and there's a lot of chaos around you, so there's a certain focus, and they're looking at a white ball in front of 100,000 people, which would terrify me. But can you relate at all?
From my understanding, in my time playing golf, I have not found a common ground between the two. I'm an awful golfer, so it's truly incredible to watch what these players are able to do. But yes, they're both sports that take a lot of precision, and I, you know, as a spectator today, it's just incredible to watch what they're able to do.
All right, last thing, I've asked everybody this: you might have someone that you think is going to win the 88th Masters tournament, but I want to know who you want to win. I know you mentioned Max a moment ago. Who would you like to see win it?
Yeah, Max, obviously, you know, I feel like this is such a challenging course, and the stakes are so high, all the eyes watching you. I think from the history aspect, if I had to go somewhere else, I'd have to go with, I think it'd be cool to see John Rahm go back-to-back.
He's a great man. I appreciate you, Tyler. Thank you, brother. Friday morning here at Augusta will be very busy. The first groupings tee off at 7:45 a.m. to complete the first round of the tournament. Then shortly thereafter, the second round begins. And we'll be back here again to bring you all the highlights, analysis, and a one-on-one interview with Pro Football Hall of Famer Troy Aikman. I'm your host, Marty Smith, and it's an honor to spend this time with you each day from Augusta National. Thank you so much for joining us on 4 Please Now Driving, the official Masters podcast.